accession number 19063, Reel 2.
Bill Savage, Reel 2. You were just telling me you knew the date of this.
Yeah, it was like, do you want me to continue where I...
Yes, please.
Yeah, oh, you thought, well, if I stick my head up above the ridge, the soldiers, not the Japs, but our own soldiers, would put, you know, they were rather obviously trigger happy and very alert, and I thought, oh, I'm going to get my head blasted away, and I could literally feel the bullets tearing through my skull. But I had to take the plunge in the end, and it turned out to be all right. The good Lord was on my side. And I made my way back down the track, using my rifle as a crutch, till I came upon the first aid workers that were, first aid chaps that were coming up behind, and they dressed my wound. And an officer then gave me a lift back on a jeep back to the first aid post, where they dressed the wound again, took my rifle away, as we're now under the Red Cross. And I was eventually taken to the casualty clearing station on a converted jeep, where my leg was put in plaster. And on the way back, I was thinking, well, is this really happening? You know, is it real? Is it happening?
Which leg was it?
But this one.
The left leg?
Yeah. It didn't leave me with any lasting disabilities, but I had it in plaster about 6 weeks. But when I was in the casualty clearance station, the casualties were rolling in then, so several of my mates were coming in with tales of who'd been killed and what was happening, you know, and it was a really traumatic time. We were eventually moved from there to from one field hospital to another, and at these, I always remember the small arms fire that was going on around them from time to time, and you almost expected the Japs to come rushing through the tent any time. But it never happened, so I was eventually driven back to the Imphal airfield in a rough old army ambulance, and with a broken leg over rough tracks, you can imagine how painful that was. After a wait on the airfield, what seemed several hours, I should say, I wonder what was happening, it was just they were waiting for the planes to come in and take the wounded out, I suppose. We got put on board a Dakota aircraft and taken to Calcutta, where I was in hospital there for 3 days. That was about 3 or 4 days after I'd actually got wounded. While I was in Calcutta hospital, one bright moment was Vera Lynn coming round the wards to sing to the troops, which was one bright moment in our lives. And from Calcutta, we were taken to Chittagong, where we boarded a hospital ship that was to take us across the Bay of Bengal to Madras, with tales from some of the old soldiers, oh, the Japs are got submarines in the those waters, and the thought of swimming about in shark-infested waters with a plaster on your leg didn't go down very well. Well, I was on the hospital ship, I was suffered from a nasty throat infection that was obviously coming from the poison from my leg. And I was finding it great difficulty in swallowing. So they took me into the theatre and gave me a large injection of something or another, I don't know what it was, but made me feel very queer at the time, but I did get better after that, and we eventually landed at Madras and was in a hospital near Madras for a few days before we were sent on to the base hospital, which was in Hyderabad, a place called Secunderabad, which were very nice and lovely places.
Did you have any complaints about your medical treatment?
No complaints whatsoever. It was first class. And Finished my 6 weeks in plaster. It was taken off. We went to another convalescent depot and finished up in the transit camp at Douanley again. Well, we spent quite some time there, I think. It's all a bit vague, the times and dates. But when I eventually rejoined my unit, they'd come out of the line and we were in a place called Visapur in India.
And just coming back to Nippon Hill, you saw the hurricanes go in.
Yes, saw the hurricane. That was when they came in. That was a signal for us to get moving. You know, to start our going up the rough track that led to the top of the hill. You know.
And you said you bore left.
Yeah, we veered left off the track as though we were going to make sort of coming in round the rear more. You know.
That was your platoon, you mean?
Yeah, our platoon, our guerrilla platoon. I didn't know much about the battle as a whole, like the positions, but in one of my books, what the newsletter that the association sends out, there's quite a good account of it, and I learnt more from that about the Battle of Nippon Hill than I ever did when I was there. The general overall strategy of it, you know.
And how long were you advancing for before you were hit?
It wasn't very long, about 10 minutes, I suppose. Wouldn't be more than 10 minutes, I don't think, because we got quite away until we come to these mortar bombs they were dropping all around us, you know. I think if it hadn't been for the fact that I was on a hilly part of the country and the bomb dropped down below me, if it had been on level ground, I think it would have been curtains for me. But I think the side of the hill took the blast. It just happened to get a bit of shrapnel.
And when you first hit, did you experience pain at first?
I didn't feel a thing when it was actually happened. It was just completely disorientation, you know. It was a blast, like it enveloped you and... After it was seconds, I suppose, I started to come around, you know, and realised that there was something wrong with my leg, and then it did really start paining then, you know, because it went straight into the bone. And several of my close mates were wounded in that battle as well, John Nichols and Arthur Smith. John Nichols was a Cornishman and Arthur Smith was a Birmingham man.
So you said you rejoined your unit somewhere in India?
Yeah, in Visapur, a place called Visapur in India.
What state were they in by the time you joined them?
Well, of course a lot of them had been wounded, injured and some killed, you know, and... But they were all right. I've got a photograph, actually, of our company. I was in HQ company then, I think. I'll let you see it before you go. Of our company in Visapur. So we were there quite some time, and eventually the war in Europe finished. That we were there when the war finished, I think. No, we weren't. We were... in some wild, outlandish place when the war in Europe finished. I remember we got drunk on local brew whiskey because there was nothing else available. And it was, we were at Visapur when the atom bomb dropped and finished the war with the Japs, which we were all very pleased about, naturally, because we were training to go back in to drive them out of the rest of Southeast Asia, which wasn't a very nice thing to look forward to.
And then?
Well, from then on, it was lots were being drawn for a home back to Blighty, which was called LIAP, I think they called it, Leave in Lieu of Poison. Poison is the was the name for a repatriation, and we were given a month. I was one of the lucky ones that, well, there were quite a few got leave anyway. We got a month's leave back to India, back to England rather. From Bizapur, we had to go to, we were driven to Pune, the back of lorries, which is about 60 miles away. From Pune, we went to Karachi in a Dakota aircraft. Always remember Karachi. I went in the mail room there, the dining hall, to get some, I think it was fish and chips, and I had a big fried cockroach just up on my plate. I always remember that. And then we boarded a Stirling bomber, a converted Stirling bomber, which had seats of a kind in it, for the journey back to England, which was accomplished in about 5 hops, I think it was. We went from Karachi to a place called Jeddah in the Middle East. Then from Jeddah to Haifa in Palestine. From Haifa across to Castel Bonito in North Africa. And from Castel Bonito to Marseille in France, and from Marseille in France to Cambridge in England. And that was which took about 4 days altogether, which today would be about a few hours in a modern jet, I suppose. And a train journey back to down this part of the country to home, where we had a 4 weeks leave. It was I think that was just before Christmas in 1945. My leave expired about a week or a few days before Christmas, but we had an extension come through to take us over to Christmas. And then, so I finished up with about 5 weeks leave, and from there we went back to Southampton for the journey on a boat, which was one of the, I think it was the Strathmore then, that we went back out to India. And I think the first time we went out, the Suez Canal was closed. That's why we had to get off at Portside and go to Suez in cattle trucks. But when we came back from leave, it was open, and we went straight through the Suez Canal to Bombay, which was quite a nice little journey, really. And from Bombay to our leg again, but our unit had already gone. They'd moved to Malaya, so we had to go on to Madras, get a lift there from Madras to Singapore, and it was on a tank landing ship tank, they called it, which had been taken over from the Americans. It was only a small boat, and that was like a 7-day luxury cruise, really, because all we did was sit about in shorts and eat all the lovely food that the Americans had left on board when they'd been taken over, you know, from the washing the flying fish. And I think we spent a lot of our time composing crossword puzzles for each other. And from Singapore, we went up to a place called where our unit was, and Batu Bahat, Batu Bahat, Bahat. One of our duties while we were there were searching the Jap prisoners as they were coming out of the jungle. They had already surrendered, and they were coming out of the jungle, and we were given the job of searching them, and we were told to take any watches, pens or cameras that they'd obviously taken from other people. And I think I came home with about 23 watches. We were supposed to hand them in, but I think there were so many that they shut their eyes to that, you know. And also I had a Japanese sword, which my wife didn't like in the house, so I sold it to a bloke when I was back in Civvy Street again. From Batu Bahat, when we We went on to barracks Changi in Singapore, Selarang Barracks, I think it was called. And one of the duties there we had was escorting Japanese or alleged Japanese war criminals from Changi Jail into a courtroom in Singapore where they were being tried for allegedly war crimes. That was one of our last duties, I think, before we got sent home from 4D MOP.
How were the Japanese prisoners behaving?
Well, they looked pretty subdued, but they did look a ruthless lot. You know, they all had their heads shaved, and they looked a pretty mean lot. But I mean, they never tried anything on. Like, we escorted them into the courtroom, and then that was just waiting until they came out again to escort them back. But after that, it was just a matter of waiting. We used to spend quite a lot of time swimming there. In the Straits of Malacca, they had a shark-proof stockade erected, you know, so we could swim in safety. Like, but when the tide came in, there wasn't much water inside the stockade, so we used to occasionally dive from the stockade onto the outside, which was perhaps a silly thing to do, but it's the sort of things you do when you're young, I suppose. But nobody got attacked by sharks, anyway. But the other thing was a lot of little bits of sponge-like jellyfish that could give you a rather nasty sting. But it was quite a nice time there. And that was just a matter of waiting for your DMOB group number to come up, which eventually did. And I came back home on the Britannic, which was a 27,000-ton motor vessel as opposed to a steamship, you know. It was supposed to be the largest motor vessel afloat at that time.
How did you and your comrades feel about the delay in demob and repatriation?
Well, we were all anxious, but we knew we had to wait till our number. It was all done by number, you know, you had a demob group number. It was just a matter of, we were all anxious to get out at that time, I know, but there was nothing we could do about it. We used to go into Singapore, and they used to have these big, what they call New World, and large pleasure compactors, you know, and there was quite a lot of entertainment in there. But it was just a matter of waiting until your number came up, which it eventually did.
What rank did you finish with?
I was only a private. I wasn't interested in... I could have been promoted when I was in India, but I didn't want that. I wasn't interested.
What was the attitude of you and your comrades towards the Japanese enemy when you were fighting them?
Well, they were the enemy, and that was it. I mean, of course, not being a prisoner of war, the prisoner of war must have had a different... feeling about them altogether, because they were ill-treated. But when we were in Batu Bahat, we had working parties of Japanese prisoners, you know, and they were quite pleasant blokes, you know. They used to make things for us, and they were quite clever with their hands. But I always remember they were a bit, like, if you were marching along in a party, like, and the Japanese working gang was... stood on the side, they all were looking at you with these sort of cynical grins, you know.
How do you feel now about having served with the Devons in the Second World War?
I feel it was a great experience, and I wouldn't have missed it. I made a lot of friends and people from all over the country. It was a great experience, I think. I don't think I would have missed it. I mean, we had very rough times. We had good times as well, you know.
What was the roughest time you had?
Well, I think that was the roughest time when we were up in the actual front line. It was all living rough all the time, and you didn't know whether you were ever going to see England again, because it seemed so far away and remote, you know. You wondered, you couldn't see an end to it, because the Japs were got entrenched so far into Southeast Asia that, of course, the atom bomb finished all that, which we were glad of in that respect.
How did you and your comrades feel about fighting in Burma as opposed to Europe?
Well, we just went where we were sent. We never, I don't think we ever discussed it, really.